What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to taste the flavoriest flavor to ever flavor? Snapple is ridiculously flavorful. And you can uncap a Snapple real fat with every bottle. Like, cows produce more milk when they listen to music. Come on, leave the ridiculousness to Snapple. And grab one of your favorites that pack a punch. Explore all of the delicious flavors at Snapple.com.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. Whatever you're into, with Amazon Prime, you can go deep. So if you're all about pop right now, you could watch pop documentaries on Prime Video. Discover pop playlists on Amazon Music Prime. And if you're really serious, order a rhyming dictionary with fast free shipping from Prime. From shopping to streaming to saving, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Forever!
I don't know if we should start talking about YA novels in general, or if we should just start talking about X-Men first.
Listen, man, I want to say something quick about YA novels. I love these movies and these books, but what I realize is that you will have one of these YA books and it will be a black girl lead, but she's always in love with a white dude. And I've been Googling, there has never been a young black guy as the love interest in a YA movie. Like, I am saying that while Chubbs. Looking at Chubb.
Who loves Chubb? I mean, everyone loves Chubbs. That's the thing.
No one loves Chubbs.
You can watch all these movies. Like, and there's, if there is a black dude in it, he is the Chubbs. He is the best friend
he's the jokester.
Yeah, why man. Was he swearing so much?
You know like, why.
Every line for no reason.
He was so impressive.
Yeah.
He was so unlikable. In every way.
Oh, there's, my goodness.
Okay, so there's Hunger Games, right? There's Maze Runner. Mm-hmm. There's Divergent series.
There's Perks of this, Perks of a Wallflower. Yo.
Okay.
No, that's a YA.
Just he's just saying YA. Like,
oh, I'm guess, saying yeah. YA.
No, he's okay, like going to right. cinema history. He's
I
like,
get it.
Since
I get
the
it.
Beginning.
There's is that? No I guess that's real. Like even it in is. Fantasy YA or like.
Well, what I think is so yeah. funny about Darkest Minds though is like Chubbs the character knows he does not have a shot with Amanda. Like, and Amanda like seems to automatically recognize like that's not going to be my love interest. Like, it's a smart black guy just sitting there, like attractive, smart, very witty, and everyone's just like, yeah, that's not going to work. So you go ahead and just start being an asshole. I'm gonna look at the white guy who's leading us all and focus my time and attention on him. It was like automatic. It's like the movie knew.
Yo, there literally is a movie with a black male lead. Okay, we reviewed it. And I just realized as I'm looking at YA movies, The Hate U Give, this man died. Okay, the black love interest was shot. And then
and
the white dude is the dude who gets to come to the hood and meet the family and like go on this journey.
There's also one that I feel, I don't know if it was actually based off of a YA book, but there was another like alien movie with a black lead that also never got like any. Actually, there's two. There's Kin, which was based off a short film,
which I saw. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
did he have a love interest?
One never wants to get.
I saw that.
Yeah, which I saw. He was too young to have a love interest, right? He didn't have a. There wasn't like a little girl that he liked or.
Yeah, no, he was too young. But they could have done like a My Girl situation. Like he could have, you know, there could have been someone his age that he loved, you know.
It's it almost pretends. As if these stories are like a product of a systemically racist society or something.
It's like.
Weird.
But being written by the Darkest Minds.
John, come on, man. We got a guest, bro. We trying to get a job after this. What you doing?
No, he's saying it came out of a racist society. It was leaped from the Darkest Minds.
With the whitest gaze.
Now that's how we start a show.
Jonathan Braylock,
James the Third,
Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
You know what it is.
Black men can't jump.
Black actors, all right.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Quarantine City.
It's a green pepper. What are you doing with the green pepper? Wait till it's red. Wait till it's red, damn it. God, you piece of shit.
Why was he so angry?
He was fucking pissed.
Why was he so mad at my man?
Chubbs is like, y'all aren't listening to me.
Yo, Chubbs was so mad.
Oh my God.
When Chubbs is on that goddamn farm, like talking about the peppers, I was like, bro. Why do you care this much, Chubbs?
Pull it back, Chubbs. Like, pull it back.
Yo.
His name was Chubbs. Oh my God. And that was never explained.
No, they had one throwaway line. He used to be bigger. Remember? Like, that was it.
I missed that line.
When they're first in the car, the lead white dude talks to Zoo. What's her name? Zoo.
Zoo. The mute Asian child.
Yes, the mute Asian child. Yes. Zoo. Mm-hmm. Talks
Man,
to
we
Zoo,
gotta talk about that, too.
And it goes, Zoo, you remember when he was a little bit bigger? And then she nods, and that is the only time it's been a
yes.
Do we learn why she doesn't speak? I'm sorry, I'm not waiting
not.
My turn. I'm
we
sorry.
Don't.
No, we okay. don't.
We don't. All right.
But I imagine in later books we learn. You know what I mean? Like in later, like in the sequel.
Maybe the third book.
I won't learn in a later book.
The third book. Is this based on?
Okay, real quick, let's just do intros. Wait, did I say what my name is? No. My name is Jonathan Braylock.
I'm Gerard Milligan.
And my name is James the Third.
Okay, and we have an incredible guest in the quarantine studio. Gerard's doing drums to introduce. That was the worst drums I've ever heard.
Come on, man. Wait, man. I gave you the... That's a snare drum right there.
All right, everyone. We got Justin Simeon.
Thank you.
Creator, director, writer, producer.
An enemy to Jonathan and Jera, apparently.
An enemy.
Mortal enemy.
Enemy to two-thirds of the Black Men Can't Jump podcast.
How are you doing, James?
I'm chilling, you know? I feel good.
No, man, in all honesty, this is cool. Because, again, man, you know, part of that whole Netflix family, and I think, you know, what the film Dear White People did, I mean, good God. Like, I had never seen Tessa Thompson until that film. Like, that shit came out like gangbusters, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've talked about this on the podcast for a long time, but we're, you know, huge fans of Dear White People, both the film and the show. Have some friends, Jack Moore, who I went to NYU with, also a writer on the show. I would remember watching the show with my wife, and then I forgot. It was one of those episodes. I think it was the episode where gets harassed by the cops and like the gun gets pointed to his head.
Oh yeah, Reggie.
And
that's real.
And I see like Jack's name and I was just like, what? I was like, what? I didn't know. I just saw
no man. It's dope, dude. Like, my friend Dave had a bit part on it. Then what? My friends know her. I don't really know her, but Ashley, Blaine, like, people know. But also, it is real funny because you got Gus as the narrator, and every time I hear, John gets mad. I say his name. Gus will always James. Don't get mad at me, James.
Gus,
don't be mad
again.
Don't be mad at me. Just has such a unique voice, and I love that as
Giancarlo's.
He ages. He seems way cooler. Like, when he appears...
He seems
like,
settled.
Yeah, like, when he appears, like, his style, everything just feels like, yeah, bruh, like, I don't know. Yeah, it's so cool to me. It's so cool.
Yeah. Good old Gus. Anyway, for those who don't know, though, we review films of leading black actors on this show. Yeah. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And,
I got your back. I got your back.
I don't
like
it.
And we ensnare black filmmakers to watch...
yes, really to watch what?
Yeah, we should add that to the description of this film.
We watch really interesting films and make them talk about them.
We watch the movies that the man won't let you know exists. So we watch it so the people at home don't have to watch. Well, you should watch it at home. Never mind.
Today we're reviewing The Darkest Minds. It's based on a YA novel. Came out in 2018. It stars Amandla, is it Stenberg?
Steinberg.
Which most people probably know from The Hate U Give, and she's just a rising star, extremely incredible actress. But this movie did not do so well in theaters. It had $34 million budget. And it only made $41 million worldwide, but like in America, I think it only made $12 million. I remember when it came out.
It cost $34 million to make.
Yeah.
Those explosions, man.
Yeah.
I tried, y'all, everyone listening at home, I tried to get them to talk about X-Men. So.
Well, here's how we couldn't do it because, John, you say it better. Well, like, Storm talks four times.
X-Men, which is we are going to talk about X-Men because it's a great point that Justin had brought up, which is X-Men is a film, you know, also based off a comic book, where ostensibly mutants are being persecuted in a way that is remarkably similar to the black experience in America and the civil rights movement. And yet, out of like all the characters in this film, there's essentially one black person in the movie.
Do you know what happens to a toad when it is struck by lightning?
Oh. Also, when you think
about
it,
that's her most famous line. Are Halle Berry, an Academy Award winner. Now, she didn't win the Oscar until I think a year later. But
it was next year. For the second film.
Right. But she was an established. For X-Men.
I was like, did John know he's like
her brilliant turn as Storm?
But when you think about X-Men, which is so sad though, yes, like there has been talk like Professor X is MLK, you know, Malcolm X is Magneto. But when you think about the roster on both teams, Brotherhood and X-Men, there are only two characters that are black that are known. Storm, who's been there since the beginning, and then Bishop, who is from the future.
My man
is from the future. That's the only time we see black dude in that world.
When they made Deadpool 2, was that not Bishop? No, that was
Cable.
I'm sorry. So I always get them confused. Because they're both from the future. Aren't they both from the future?
They are both from the future.
They both from the future. They both technically will work together. One's black with a jerry
curl.
Like
a jerry curl, yeah. A jerry curl mullet.
Yeah, they updated him in the comic recently. He got a fade with the sponge. So his hair is fly right now, but it's still just him. Like there's no. Mm-hmm.
They could have.
He didn't even talk. He didn't even talk in the movie. Like when he was in the movie, right? Like
he's
in Days of Future Past. He's in Days of Future Past.
Yeah, he's in Days of Future Past for like 5 seconds. He doesn't talk much.
I'm not counting that at all. We were looking through. There have been, I think, 12 movies made based off of X-Men comic books. 12. And zero of them have a black lead. The closest is Halle Berry in X2 and what's her name played in Deadpool 2?
Domino.
Yeah,
Domino.
Zazie. She played
Zazie. Yeah.
And she played
and
Domino.
And they go out of their way to kill Darwin in
he's the
X-Men
only
First
person.
Oh, they go out of the way to kill him.
Yo, he's the only mutant to die in that movie.
Yeah.
They do. They go out of their way. But you know what? This is there are so many American science fiction franchises. Planet of the Apes is the one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. But where like black shit is being used as like flavor. Because like the thing that makes Marvel and not DC is that they infuse the superheroes with like immigrant experiences, and specifically for the X-Men, the black experience. Like that was on purpose. Like Malcolm X and Magneto was on, like, this, the shit came out of the 60s. Like, this was all very much on purpose. But they were like, but no one's going to read a comic book about blacks. So we have to encase it in this metaphor.
Unless black is in the title. You know, Black Lightning, Black Panther.
Yes.
We only got to be black. Also, this is a complete tangent, but I just watched a clip of this movie. The first Transformers. This is very annoying. There's one Transformer who's like a black car.
Jazz.
Speaks. Jazz. The only Transformer that Megatron kills is Jazz. And Jazz tries to like hip hop, like Black Ranger, kung fu fight, dance fight, and he just rips him apart and just throws him. He's and the only one to die.
What makes me mad about Jazz and Darwin is sort of the same thing. It's like the bad guy has like a retort, like a witty line that they say when they die. Like when he kills Darwin, he goes, adapt to this. And then we just have to watch him suffering, trying to adapt to the thing. And then Jazz goes, you want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? And then the guy goes, I'll take two, and then rips him in half.
It's like, doesn't he say something like kind of racist in the movie too? Like, doesn't
Jazz? His all of his dialogue is wrong.
His opening line is, "What's cracking, little bitches?"
That's right. That's right. Yes. Right. Which, you know, black people were consulted for that line of dialogue, I believe.
Craziest thing is that Michael Bay doubled down on his racism in Transformers 2. Then there were two black characters.
Oh, yes.
These dumb, like, twins who are so stupid.
Yeah. And they don't do much reading is one of their lines.
They literally have a line where they say, we don't do much reading.
I just Googled it, and there's a headline that says, why weren't the racist robots in Transformers 2 canceled?
Why are we doing this? But, yo, every time we do this podcast, I get excited, but then I realize that we're in a business that is straight up racist, even though it's supposed to be the business that's more... I'm accepting of people of different colors, but then we look at stuff, it's like, yo, there is a hip-hop robot. Like, this is a hip-hop robot, y'all. John brought up the two robots I took out of my mind, because these dudes were like, they were crows. Like, these are 100%. The Mitchell Show crows.
Yeah.
And they're in a movie.
A movie that made like $1 billion.
A billion. $1 billion.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
We all, that's we all why been fighting, trying to get content that's just... Okay, you know what? I'm going to go.
So finally, though, you know, we don't need to be upset, though, because finally in 2018, you know, The Darkest Minds, the reality was the YA novel, the main character in the book was white. And they were like, you know what? We're going to be woke. We're going to be diverse. We're going to cast this as a black girl. And you know, some of the internet was mad about that, like they always are. They're mad about the black stormtrooper. They're mad anytime they're mad about Annie being black. You know, they're just always they're always mad about.
Weren't
fictional...
they mad about Amandla in Hunger Games?
Yes, they were.
They're mad about in Hunger Games.
I read that book.
I did too.
The character is described as black.
Yes,
and they were mad.
Like, it's like
they
you still hear mad. What they to say her skin color is. First off, Hunger Games, low key. The black people were from the plantation district. I'm going to leave that alone.
Yes,
they were from the plantation district.
It's a good point to bring up.
My man is in overalls. Okay. They got... All right.
We haven't even introduced the movie. I'm sorry.
We haven't. I mean, we introduced the movie. We just haven't... It feels like we're avoiding talking about it. That's what it feels like. maybe that's because this movie got a 16% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Reviews aren't everything.
If reviews aren't everything, though, we know this. I mean, we got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, but
we still ain't get a season two though. We got 100. We had Rotten Tomatoes started tweeting this shit on their own, and still,
okay. Anyway. This movie didn't do well financially. That's the only thing Hollywood cares about. And so even though the book series has multiple, I think it has multiple books. There's not going to be another version of this movie. And to be fair, the YA, by the time this came out, there had been so many dystopian YA kind of movies similar to this, at least in the sense that it's a future with some sort of oppressive government. That's like keeping kids down.
Yes, a future. Sorry.
But those movies, even like Divergent, which I don't think it got to finish out all of the books, but the first movie still did decently. It made like 200.
It was. The first
million.
One was good.
The Maze Runner, like, same thing. Like, it, you know, the movies went down, but they I think they actually got to finish. They did all three of their movies.
What's up, folks? This podcast is sponsored by Earnin. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Think about it. Say you're going out for a special date, or it's getting hot, y'all. You might need a fresh outfit for brunch or something nice, or maybe you just want to feel good and take yourself to dinner. Earnin can help you today. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Mm-hmm. Download Earnin today. That's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Jump Under Podcast when you sign in. It'll help the show out. Jump Under Podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period. See earnin.com/DOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Lay's. Lay's potato chips are made from real potatoes from real farms, and they're closer than you might think. Golden grows here on over 100 farms across North America. So whenever you open up a bag of Lay's, you can thank your farmers for making your stay golden moments possible. Lay's, stay golden. To learn more, head to goldengrowshere.com.
Thunderpants!
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and chewy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah! So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good. Share a delicious Laffy Taffy moment with the people you love. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Should we talk? Should we do initial thoughts? I mean, this movie, you know, the premise of the film is, you know, it's kind of like an X-Men thing of like, except it's not everyone. It's just kids specifically are getting mutant powers. 90% of the world's children have died. It was like very grim.
Why you say it like that? Why? That's how they say it in the movie. They say the word dead kids about 14 times in the opening of this YA movie.
And you're like, oh, that sounds like a crisis, like a human extinction crisis.
Which no one is concerned with, nor is
no one addresses. We literally never talk about it. I was like, are they going to talk about the fact that all of the remaining kids they're putting into like what appears to be like concentration camps and like killing
them? Because there's a cute boy and he drives a van and he must be the focus of this narrative.
Yo, isn't that the guy from 1619 or what is that movie? The one that just came out, the war movie with the one long, was it 1619? Was the name of the movie?
I'm not seeing any other credits in his Wikipedia besides Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and something called Matthias and Maxime.
Yeah, that's not the lead of 1917, if that's what you mean.
Oh, I thought it was
that's a different person.
They do look similar. They do. I mean, they have similar eyes, but he's significantly younger than that guy, I think.
This is a different Caucasian.
Justin, you want to go first with your initial thoughts?
No. Yeah, well, yeah. I wanted to talk about X-Men. I mean, This is like, look, Amandli is great in it, I will say. Like, yeah. She is acting her ass off. The movie doesn't really deserve her, but it's sort of like, you know, this is what happens. This is why diversity is bad and inclusion is good, because it's like, we just changed the lead character to a black girl, but in no way address the racial implications of that. And so, you know, this movie, which is ostensibly a metaphor for the black experience, is actually void of any actual, like, truthiness about the black experience, because it is never brought up or addressed. And I thought it was really bad, you know, it was, but I know no one tries to make a bad movie, but it felt like it was caught. It felt like it was made by a lot of studio executives with a lot of notes about the marketplace and appealing to the most amount of teens or something, because I can't figure out what the movie is meant to say or be about. Those are just my first thoughts.
No, yeah, that's real. Those are great thoughts.
I never thought about it like that in like
diversity,
inclusion. Yeah, like that's a very good way to put it.
It's like, you know, Little Fires Everywhere. It's like they made the lead character black, but then they at least understood that that means that the whole thing has to become about her being a black woman, because that is, you know, such a major piece of her experience. And with this, I felt like it was such a missed opportunity, because, you know, it's a YA movie, but we have kids saying shit and fuck and things are blowing up and kids are dying. 98% of all children die in the opening of this film. But yet we couldn't broach the topic of race and gender. That felt like an odd choice to me.
Yeah.
100%, because I think what you just said, like, you don't know what this movie was really trying to say, is that's my initial thought of this movie is like, there were interesting things happening. Like, this could have been an interesting movie, and I'm sure the book is at fault with this, but also they change movies from books all the time, so you could have done that with the screenplay, and made it. It's like, what is the point of this outside of just like, oh, kids have superpowers and they're running away from, like, you know, some shadowy government that's trying, that, you know, makes them prison laborers or kills them because they're afraid. But we never really understand why they're afraid. Like, you know, outside of, we're just supposed to know, well, you know, people always fear what they don't know and they might have too much power. But like, in a movie, in like X-Men series, right, or the movies, we understand there are mutants who are fed up with parts of the government that are trying to oppress them. And so they're fighting back, which fuels this thing, right? It's very, so when we think about, for instance, the protest that just occurred, and how a lot of the narrative that some of the media start to focus on was rioting, all of the, like, this building, this police precinct got burned, this police car got burned, like, these stores got looted. And even though that was such a small part of what was happening, that was the focus. It was like, see, we have to get these people under control. They're trying to tear down our country and rip it apart, even though the actual protest is about, you know, justice, like, equality. And so there's nothing really like that in this movie. They just start rounding up the kids. And again, and because the extinction thing is never talked about, it makes it seem, it's like psychotic. It was like, okay, so every adult on this planet just became a psycho at the same time, you know? And the only ones who didn't are, like, I guess a part of this other thing that are just training child soldiers, which is another interesting concept brought up in the movie, but never actually explored. We don't really understand the implications of what this other, I forgot what they were called, the league or whatever.
The league.
Oh, like, right, the league. Like, the league it feels like the army or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like,
a child army.
Yeah, which we never really see. We never, like, we hear about it, but then there was never an opportunity to see, like, a part of this child's army, like, kill human beings, you know what I mean? Like, in a way that, or kill adults in a way that felt like, oh man, what, you're taking away these kids' humanity. Like, yes, they're fighting for a good cause, but is this the right way? But we never get into any of that. Instead, it's just, I guess, a somewhat of a chase film for a lot of it. And I don't know. This movie was a mess, but I will say this. I do think the actors, for the most part, were very, the kid actors were very good. I'm upset that they didn't have a better script. And also, I feel bad for the little girl who played Zoo because
she doesn't talk.
She doesn't get ever to talk. And I get it. And that, I think that's probably in the book as well. But like, we don't know why, which makes it worse, right? And, yeah, and because we don't know why, she doesn't get the opportunity to be like super expressive or like a moment of we see her communicating, you know what I mean, with no words, which is possible, but
token, yeah, I think is the, yeah, word you're, it's searching
very token
for.
Yeah.
She's a token character that has no inner life or dialogue.
Yeah. Also, this dude, yeah, Skylin Brooks was awesome. The kid who played Chubbs, he was great, even though he's, yeah, the most stereotypical role in this whole
that
thing.
That part always happens to people, like even Justice Smith. He was in this movie called Paper Towns, which the two leads were white, like Cara Delevingne and like Alex Wolff. And like, he is the friend who doesn't want to go along with it. He is the awkward, like geeky dude who's always there. And it's like, this is just the part that if you're going to be a young black kid in these movies, you got to get this one. Or if it's like one of those action sci-fi movies, you're probably like the tough soldier dude who like has to fight with the lead white guy at some point, like in Maze Runner. Like, you're the leader, but you're not the leader. You know, like if you're going to be in Hunger Games, like you are the big black dude who can throw stuff, you know, and then you die, mm-hmm, off screen. Like, I don't know.
I think this movie is like emblematic. Is that a right? Is that a word?
Yes, that's cool. Exactly a word. It
is emblematic of Hollywood's race problem, in my, yes, opinion. Yeah. Yeah. This movie came out in 2018. It stars an amazing black female actress who is also, in her own right, an activist and a leader. Yes. There's no reason why this movie should be emblematic of Hollywood's race problem, but it is, because it is based on a marginalized premise, okay? Like, we're either talking about the Holocaust, or we're talking about Japanese internment camps, or we're talking about slavery, black people, and all of civil rights. Those are the only three things this movie could possibly be about, mm-hmm, because it's so dire. And yet, Asian people, this was directed by a South Korean director, so I'm not going to blame the director. This feels like a very studio-driven project. Please still hire me, 20th. I don't know. Anyway, so like,
that makes everything hard.
I know, this is so hard. But they were working for a different company then, so it's totally fine. And, you know, essentially, like, all of the characters whose voices could even speak to those experiences are completely sidelined in the narrative and are centered around whiteness. Because, like, everywhere that Amandala goes, there is an obnoxious white person that she has to impress and, like, get on her side. Either it is the nameless drill sergeant in the first camp.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is the cute white boy that, you know, to me doesn't really have much else going on besides being a cute white boy who can drive. And then the evil white boy at the end. Like, it's always, yeah, about, it's still about the white people, yeah, even, right, though it's supposedly about liberation and stuff. It's so odd.
I mean, it's tough because I think I'm actually watching this movie now. I was like, oh, I've seen this before. I'm not sure where I saw it before, but I remember it. And Amandala, it's so funny you said that, Justin. Like, I think I'm now at a point where it's hard for me to separate like the person from their work because I've known of her and her activism for so long. Like, right, Amanda was the first of those young actresses who came out and was like, yo, like, I'm black, I do this, I do that. Like, she was the one who came out before Zendaya talking about that. She came out before Yara, but like, she's been with the shits the whole time. Like, she, I believe came out as queer. Like, she's with the shits, which is great. And it's funny watching her do a movie like this where it does feel like such a missed opportunity. You know what I mean? And it feels like it didn't even have to be the main conflict. It just needed to be addressed. You know, like,
right,
as somehow you could just address that her experience right now is a little bit different because she's a black woman, because where it's coming from. Like, you could have made so much nuance and made this movie a little bit smarter if you just talked about the elephant in the room. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, and we just avoided it. And even watching, I don't know, man, even watching it and thinking about, I watched this show called The Boys, which is a Amazon,
oh, yeah, yeah,
superhero,
yeah,
show.
Yeah.
There's another character on that show called The Woman. And it's an Asian woman who is like the best fighter. Like she can kill anybody, but she does not talk. They had a flashback. Yep. Why does she not talk? I don't know, but she doesn't talk.
She went through something traumatic or something.
Yeah, so she does not speak.
It's beside the point. She's beautiful and she can fight. Yes. So
and watching this, I'm like, oh, this is just a young version of that movie. It's like the character went through something. She has electrical power, so she was powerful, and she just doesn't talk still. And it perpetuates the same stereotypes. And I think it's so funny because watching this movie, I'm like, a bunch of kids who did see this saw this. And it just gives them the same idea of people of color that they've always had that has not changed from my generation, my parents' generation. It's just trickling down and we're just still in the same place no matter what. And it's like, damn, this is with a person of color director too. They still sidelined her.
Yeah, you know, they changed the color. In the book, it was yellow. And then they changed it to gold because they were like, oh, well, that might be offensive.
Yeah, so we can't call her yellow.
Oh, the Asian character was yellow?
Yeah, gold. She was gold.
In the movie, they changed it to gold because the only yellow or gold category that we know, the only person from that category that we know is the mute Asian girl.
Is she Asian in the book too?
Yep.
Wow.
That's really unfortunate because I feel like this is a South Korean director, I believe. Yeah, she's from South Korea. Yeah. She directed. She directed the Kung Fu Panda movies, or 2 and 3. Right. I mean, I'm not gonna speak for her because that would be against all the things we're talking about. But it feels like her voice is not as in this as I would imagine. Yeah. I don't know.
Also is like from her IMDb. It's like this is her first live action thing also. So like there was probably I would imagine there's pressure. There's a different pressure that adds to, right? Like to fight back to.
Yes.
100%.
But there's something
probably get blamed for this movie. You know what I mean?
I'm looking at the writing as well as, because if I'm being honest, the scenes weren't poorly directed. Like that wasn't what was at issue for me in the film. It was conceived badly. One thing I have to say, and yes, I am bringing it back to the X-Men, which is that
smart.
In a lot of ways, this movie is X-Men's fault because X-Men, which I think is a good movie. I think X2 is a great movie. Yes, and that's kind of all I have to say about the X-Men franchise as someone who grew up with the comics and loved it with my whole body. I really think X2 is a great movie. That's all I have to say. But I feel like from the beginning, that franchise was a compromised franchise. It was like, it was already a hodgepodge. I feel like we were in a homophobic reaction to Joel Schumacher still as a society and Batman having nipples. And so when we do the X-Men, everyone's in like black leather, like there's no flamboyancy whatsoever, which is very ironic given the filmmaker. There's no sense of gayness in that movie, and it's a superhero movie, and what are we doing? This is about hairy men in tights. Like, this is a gay... All superhero movies are gay, guys. I'm so sorry. So we erased that from it. We erased the civil rights thing from it, and I feel like because that was so successful and so many movies following that model are so successful, there was probably no reason to think this wouldn't be successful. We're just doing the thing that we do in all the other movies. And we're putting a black lead in it. And there's like one line about the colors not being segregated. So we did it, guys. We solved racism. Give us money. So in a lot of ways, I think, you know, it is connected to that system. And I just wish that I wish that people understood that, like, the black experience really is the quintessential American experience. It always is. They always go to jazz music or rock and roll or hip hop or a black lead or whatever, and fetishize us in the midst of a movie, objectify us to make it pop.
I mean, but the thing is, it's hard to talk about that because our villains aren't some faraway, distant people. You know what I mean? I feel like our villains are here. Like, again, like people who, I mean, look, man, I'm gonna be real. Like, people who lynched black folk in the streets, some of them are still here. That is someone's grandma. Like, I remember it's this famous photo I bring up all the time. It's like this young black man who is lynched, and it's a young white girl pointing at it, smiling. that woman is still alive.
Right.
You know, like she, like our people are
still
here.
She works at Trader Joe's.
She's the one who doesn't give you, she's the one who charges you for the extra bag. It's like, look, the bag is 5 cents. Don't try to charge me 20.
No, the problem with her name is Amy. She works at the Trader Joe's on Hyperion. And she is, she overplays it. You know, she like tries to sneak things into my bag. Like she's doing me a favor. I'm like, I don't need that, Amy. What's up? Like, are you trying to make up for something? And now I get it.
I mean, every time someone talks about the Confederacy and like a lot of this stuff, I think there's a bastardization of our history. Yeah. But the thing is, if we talk about our history, I remember reading, like everyone kept passing around that Golden Girls clip. And in the clip, you know, when Don Cheadle was like schooling one of the Golden Girls, she's like, you're making me rethink all my memories. And I'm like, and that is the hard part, is like, you will have to rethink your vacations, the things your grandparents said, the things your aunt said, because maybe those people aren't the best people. And that is a very hard thing to think about. And I think that is why, as African Americans, we will continue to have a hard time, because no one wants to be bad. No one wants to be racist. Like, no one wants to take accountability, because it will make you readjust who you are and realize things. Even as a man, like, there may be things people are like, yo, that's sexist. And I'm like, wait, no, it wasn't. And now I have to rethink how I do things, you know?
The thing I don't like about that Golden Girls clip is at the end of it, Don Cheadle says, and I won't judge every white person
that.
I see.
I hate that. I hate that. They had to add it. They had to add it. I remember watching that. I was like, of course they have to add that to protect white fragility. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's a way to be like, no, but it's not just you who's bad. It's all of us. That's what's, you know, Terry Crews tweeting, you know what I mean?
It's the white gaze. Honestly, it's the white gaze. It's who is this for? Who is this made for? There was a movie called Lemon that I happen to love that critics were not kind to, by Jenixa Bravo. And I've been talking about it because I'm like, the reason critics didn't love that movie is because it's not from the white gaze. It is the same. What she was doing with that movie is she was making the same movie that is always made every single year about a sociopathic white person who nonetheless is charming to everyone in the film and ends up getting his way and makes us feel empathetic towards him. That's like so many fucking movies. So she just made that movie, but from a black woman's point of view. It's about a white person, but it's not in the white gaze. And that just makes people uncomfortable. And I feel like what's making me uncomfortable about this movie, about Darkest Minds, is that it has a black person in it, but it is from the white gaze. It is completely from the point of view of the white people in this film, even though they're not the lead characters or, you know, ostensibly the point of view.
Yeah.
It's also so frustrating. Like, Justin, you said, sorry, bro, I'll let you go. I'm looking, I'm just looking up Bravo now, and it's like, it's something you said earlier about like how the director of Darkest Minds will probably get blamed for this movie. And something about that I know is true, but it bothers me in a way, because we've talked about this on this podcast. We're like, you will see this young white director who does an indie film, and now he gets a studio movie, and it could bomb. It could bomb. Yes. And he still gets the next big movie. You know what I mean?
Josh Trank has a movie coming out, right?
I wanted to say his name, but I was like, I forgot his last name. Yes, and he talks about it. Like, Josh gets to, I mean, even when I think, James, no offense, when I think about even Jurassic World, it's like, sorry, I'm just talking about Jurassic. I was talking about the director of Jurassic World.
You mean no offense?
I know you love Jurassic Park.
Did you make Jurassic World?
I did. It was me. I did.
Wow.
I didn't want to just come at Jurassic Park, you know what I'm saying? But what I'm saying is there are people who get a chance to like do these indies, make a movie that necessarily may not be, if you think about a sequel or things like that, commercially successful or even critically successful, but still gets a chance to do a bunch of stuff. And I remember reading something with Patty Jenkins, and she goes, it was hard for her to get Wonder Woman because even though she had made so much money from Monster and all these other indies, it was still seen as a risk to give a woman such a big platform. You know what I mean? And I think about like even this director, I'm like, she hasn't directed another live action film yet. And I'm like, this is crazy, because she still did two Kung Fu Pandas. And this movie, at the end of the day, didn't lose money at the box office. I mean, it didn't, you know, break records, but like
it lost money.
With the advertising,
with the marketing and all. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it
but
was
you know
30.
What? But you know what it is? You're bringing up a really good point, and I'm thinking about it because there's plenty of white guys who would have gotten a movie like this and maybe would have turned it into something special. And we're always taught to think, well, that's because that director like has the guts to do that or something. But the truth is, I'm imagining Jennifer Nelson on the set of this movie, knowing this is some bullshit, but knowing that if she raises a stink about it or like demands a better script or whatever, mm-hmm. she's going to get fired. That's the reality of it. Yeah. And to take your metaphor further, you could have a show, you know, on Netflix or something. And have 100% of Rotten Tomatoes, and you know, trying to figure out where's my pickup and where's my billboard. Yeah. So it is absolutely a double standard, and this movie is bad because of racism.
Yeah,
because of the racist system that made it.
It didn't. How could she feel that freedom knowing, first of all, when she directed those kung fu films. And they were both successful. But she was the first, I believe, just woman director, period, directing like a major like animated movie. And so she's getting a chance to direct this. It's like a first opportunity for her. And then in the middle of this of the casting, there's a whole race conversation that's happening where mm-hmm. people are complaining about this character being casted as black. And, oh, the diversity is ruining everything. And, okay, you know, there is so much like vehement pushback to just allowing people who are not white to both act and direct movies. You know what I mean? Like it's just the fact that they're doing it makes people angry, which should go like, oh wow, holy crap. If there are a bunch of people who are okay with literally saying something that's so obviously racist, how much more racism is like that we don't even understand or know about? You know, right. And then she starts to make this movie. You know, I don't blame her. I mean, like the thing that we could start talking about the movie now too, because like the intro is quick, right? And it kind of like very quickly gets you to be like, this is what's happening. It's like there was this, there was that. You know, she erased her parents' mind. I don't know if we want to comment on the fact that. I don't know if it's necessary, but...
This actor is significantly darker than a man.
Yo, yes. I ain't gonna bring it up.
Okay.
I ain't gonna bring it up.
I'm waiting for the moment.
I didn't want to bring it up, man. Yes. It don't make no sense.
This gorgeous, dark-skinned black girl grows up to be a man plus...
I leaned over to my wife, and I was like, she's too dark. She's too dark. I don't want to...
Is that going to be her sister, or that... I'm confused.
And then, I was like, do you remember what Rue looked like? And she was like, yeah. Okay, well, so... Do you see what's wrong?
Yeah, I know. And it's one of those things where I was like, I actually don't know. I don't know what it means, because I'm like, there's a part of me that's like, I'm glad that little that black girl got that part in this movie. Like we need like we actually talked about this on the podcast. For whatever reason, there does seem to be a trend in Hollywood when it comes to young black actresses. A lot of them are light skinned. Like
All of the popular ones, right now.
And her parents, too. Like not only did she get that opportunity, but then her parents also got to work a couple days on this movie.
Brooks, guys.
Yes.
Brooks. Yes. The mom.
Yes.
Wow.
And we love her.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, but go ahead, Brazer.
But there's also something else to this, like, okay... It was the way in which you knew this film was not going to be about race at all, that they just like immediately were like, whatever, black people, you know, they're all the same, and we're not really going to talk about it. Like we won't discuss
colorblind.
It.
They're just like
we're
us.
Colorblind. Exactly. I mean, it's a colorblind thing. Yeah.
Okay. There is one black part of the movie. There's one like genuine black part of the movie, and I don't even think it's on purpose. It's when Amandla goes to talk to Chubbs. They're at the new concentration camp run by the new group of white people that seem nice. And Amandla goes over to hang out with Chubbs, the other black character played by Skylyn Brooks, on the pier or something. They're like by the river.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they basically have a conversation that is like every black, when two black people get together among a group of white people that we've all had, where we're like, this is some bullshit, right? They basically have that conversation. Yeah. And it was the most authentic part of the movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
And by the way, Skylyn was in Mr. and Pete. No one's seen this movie.
No.
This movie is fucking amazing. No. And he was so good in it, by the way. Just that to me was like, that should have been the movie. The two of them recognizing that all these white people are crazy should have been the whole movie, and I would have been so happy.
And it is, you didn't even need to have like a super strong love interest. You could have just had them trying to figure out shit. And that's just the thing. I mean, it's really hard because, you know, like John was saying, like, I don't know what's happening, but it has been a trend. If it's going to be a young black girl in the movie, and again, I say this, I don't want to take anyone's jobs away. I think now, as people are talking about supporting, you know, black voices, I want everyone to eat. What I would like is I would like that we could spread out that wealth a little bit. I feel like, you know, you listen to some of these black actors, like Emma Stone ain't starring in every fucking movie. No. Because we got Jennifer Lawrence. We got other people. Whereas I feel like because the black pool is so small, we hear the same three or four names nonstop when it comes to projects. And we don't get to see the other young black actress who may be darker skinned, who could have been in this movie. You know, like, I mean, the reason we actually know of, oh my God, I'm about to mess up her name. Zuri from Black Panther is because Amandala went on record and was like, yo, I just felt like everyone, I shouldn't be this sister. Like, she was like, I feel like I should not have this part because everyone is coming from like African descent with darker skin. And she's the one who took, she took herself out of the running for that movie.
Was that after she made this movie?
Ooh.
Because that would actually make some, because I feel like Amandala would be the first person to criticize this film. I mean, she's a smart girl.
It may have came out afterwards, yeah.
And it's tough because, like, how do you turn this down? Like, this was The Hate U Give hadn't come out yet. I mean, I don't know which project she got first. I imagine she got this one before
both came out the same year.
I know it came out the same year, yeah. I don't know why I feel like she got this project before The Hate U Give. Maybe not, but she feels like she's also older when I watch The Hate U Give. I mean, maybe it's just because the subject matter, which is another conversation of how black people have to grow up faster. Black children have to grow up faster.
Like, real fast.
But yeah, it's like, you know, that she's the star of a potential franchise. You know what I mean? Like, it's an opportunity that's hard to pass down. And it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes we're critical of like, okay, why did this actor who's really famous take this role? But it's hard to really, but we also understand it. We understand like when you're trying to make it in Hollywood, you're trying to make a name for yourself. You have to do an amount of projects to get to the place where you could even feel comfortable going, now I can choose which projects I want to do, because you know how quickly Hollywood could just shut you out. The diversity, where it's like, oh yeah, diversity's hot right now, but it's been hot before. You know, these trends happen in Hollywood, which is one of the things, but it's why right now we're pushing so much, not just for, kind of, I think just brilliantly said it, like not just for diversity, but inclusion, not just so there's, you just swap out a black actor and you're like, oh, we'll make sure we have our quota filled. No, we want people who are executive producers. We want people who are network, executives. We want people in every step of the process.
A third cast member.
Yes. I mean, also, Ava did the ballsiest thing, man. She went, was it 3 weeks ago, and started tweeting out the network execs at like Disney and stuff. And again, I bring it up all the time. Y'all should go on her Twitter, find that tweet. The only black people that were execs at like Disney, it was like Fox, Universal, were the HR reps.
Wow. Yeah.
And she she's making a movie, I think, with Warner Brothers, like her big superhero movies with Warner Brothers. And she was like, yo, I'm tweeting they shit out too. And it's like, there are no execs. Like they, because I think at the end of the day, which is tough, is that in order to get one of those execs up, you're going to have to let someone go. Which means there is someone who is probably average, who was it, Harvard or somebody just did a recent report talking about, they just realized a lot of their students are either, what is it called when the family has been there already? Lineage.
Legacy.
Legacy. Like a lot of our
64%.
It's like, yeah, bruh. Like, are you just realizing this? And it's like, that's what the Hollywood ecosystem is. It's like, we pass shit down. And like, it is hard to, you have to be extra. Like, we
but
always
also
tell
define
you gotta be
just realizing. Like, did they just realize that?
Justin, take two.
Yeah, they just talked about it. Yeah. I want to say this week.
I mean, it's literally affirmative action for white people, but like at a way bigger scale.
But what that is, it's hard because now you have people, and again, they are very smart people, but you have a lot of averageness. And the thing is, to break through as a black person, you have to be so much better than everyone else that you have to be exceptional. But then, even then, you have to fight against this legacy. You have to fight against like someone who has this job because they knew somebody, because they liked somebody, because they had to, they were able to go to that good school. And you have to be good enough that one of them has to be fired. Like it is, if you're only going to have four execs and all four execs are white, but we need a black person in there, one of those four has to be let go. That's just and no one wants to be fired.
Right. But, so, you know, but the real though is like, why do we just have to have four execs? You know, there are some systemic problems with Hollywood that don't even have anything to do with race, just in like how movies get made and how television shows get made. It's not making the best work and it's not making the most cost efficient work either. But the other tricky thing, it's not just about hiring a black executive, because I'm not throwing no shade at nobody, okay? No one is being shaded. I've never met a person like this, but I've heard that when you have, you know, the singular black executive, the pressure on that executive is so intense.
Yeah. It's too much.
They don't have the freedom to act like other executives. They actually take less chances on black content, because if the one black executive takes a chance on the one piece of black content, they own that content. And if for whatever reason it doesn't come out right, or it doesn't make the money it's supposed to, they're fucking gone, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it actually, like, just having one actually kind of makes it worse for all involved. Like, you kind of have to have, like, four or five? Like, you kind of have to, like, have multiple black people at the company, which I know is asking a lot, but just, like, raising it up to, you know, the percentage of black people in the population, you know, we're not even close.
Damn, yeah. I didn't even think about that. That is so much pressure.
Yeah. We've heard stories of those face-offs.
Yeah, I mean, also, yeah, I think about it as, like, black creators. I think, I will admit, and I'm trying to come around, like, I've been super hard on certain creators where I'm like, I shouldn't give you the pressure of...
me.
Like, all of blackness. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
you've been really hard on me. Because...
What? No, listen, man. You know, I'm just saying...
you made me watch this movie.
Listen, you know... I just want to say,
Jonathan got together and made me watch this movie.
Well, you know,
so
John,
I could shade Amandla, and how dare you hit us against each other?
We're not shading her at all.
She's the thing. She's
this movie is a great learning experience.
I know she's actually like, she's worth watching the movie for. So, I would say,
and she brings, so apparently, because I was reading, I was like trying to get a sense. I didn't read the book, but I was trying to get a sense online of like the differences between the book and the movie, and And one of the things that was mentioned was that in the book, this character, it's Rudy, right? She's even more she's more passive in the book. Like a lot of things, like you know, when as a kid she makes the doctor forget that she's a orange and like and convinces him that she's a green. In the book, she does that accidentally.
Yeah,
and in the movie, they make it purposeful. Which, like, thank God, because I don't even understand. Like, there's a part of me that's like, what was this book even? Like, it sounds like it wasn't even feminist. It was written by, it was a white woman who wrote it. And I'm like, why would you make, why would you make your heroine character not active? Like, not have the agency to, and even though it was stronger in the movie, it still felt strange because I didn't exactly understand what Amandla's journey was. Now, it's like she's scared to use her powers, which is something that we have sometimes in these mutant movies, right? You have somebody who's like, they just want to blend in. They just want to, right? But the circumstances of this film make it so that if you're a kid who's alive, everyone already knows you have powers, and therefore you're either going to be put in a camp or you're going to be murdered. So the fear, I understand the fear of being murdered, but it's like at a certain point, once people know who you are, what are we, I just didn't, it didn't quite track to me.
And also like you have to think that she didn't want to use her powers, but she has been actively using them because, like, there's no way for 6 years she hides as a green when she it doesn't have that, like, she's not that smart, right? Like, she
But and also there's there are so many fucking issues with the premise, because like if you could just make the doctor think you're green, well then there should be oranges all over the place. Like, she was able to figure that out within like a few seconds. So like, where are the other oranges pretending to be greens?
Only one other orange did that.
And your power is to literally make people think whatever you want them to think. So it really, to me, it really was a story about like internalized, you know, I don't know what, subjugation, I guess, because she had the power all along. And eventually, like, essentially, like, the journey of the movie is like her, you know, trying to manage white people's feelings. Ultimately, she makes a big sacrifice to manage the white man's feelings in this movie so that he could go on and do the right thing and get over his jungle fever.
Also, I mean, this his is last really, shot.
These are the narratives we're telling in 2018.
His last shot of him running in the woods in slow motion, I was like, I don't have to see this boy keep running. The fact
I didn't
that
get
like
to the last shot.
The fact that no, it's, you didn't miss anything. But
the podcast began right before the last shot, and I didn't finish it.
I will say this, though. The one thing I did think was interesting is that the battle became between, like, this black woman and this white guy. Mm-hmm. And it, I'm going to say it was messed up. And I, like, I don't know. The moment I saw this preppy dude with a polo shirt and his collar up, I was like, I don't trust nothing about this dude. No, but also, was there, like, a weird almost assault scene in this movie?
100% yes, not almost scene. Assault.
Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Like,
he wanted her to do, he wanted her for his bidding, and he was just gonna do that.
He wanted, like, a slave.
Like, that shit was, the thing is, it happened so fast. Dark. I was like, what the, first off, okay, let me just backtrack. The opening scene when they go to the camps and they just start murking and just like knocking that one kid out. I'm like, okay, this is wild. And now at the end of this movie, we have this scene.
Piss
and
off.
And oh shit. And I'm like, what is happening? They legitimately have this scene that I feel like is addressed. But also, I really wanted her to fuck this dude up when they had the final battle. Because I'm like, yo, they're going to have a one-on-one battle. This dude is wild. We got to like scar his whole face up. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know the book, but it just felt like a missed opportunity to get a little revenge, I guess, for me. But I don't know.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if you're... I understand, like, this was somewhat targeted towards teens, and you don't want it to be too explicit. But like, if you're gonna have this notion that this guy, who literally can control people's minds, and then he's trying to learn how to erase someone's mind, and then somehow learns it. I don't really understand how he figured it out, but I guess he kind of did. Why would he just try to physically force her to, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't get that part.
Like,
I was
like, on top of everything, I will say in this regard, that character is a great analogy for whiteness in general, in that like he is trying to take her power, use up her body, and control everybody else, but pretend he's good. So in that regard, I would say the movie, you know, actually, I reverse everything I've said. This movie is good.
He was a good villain. He was a good villain. It was just that we didn't get enough of the other stuff to make it, because it wasn't leading to him, really. It doesn't even really make, it doesn't actually track. I mean, like, this is one of those movies where the more you think about the logic, the more everything falls apart. And it's hard because the initial premise, because they don't talk about the extinction element at all, like that
the human
species,
race. Like,
like, how are they going to, like, are new babies also getting like with this disease? Like,
are
what's
there
happening?
New babies?
That's what I was like. Are like, is this a Children of Men situation where everyone just knows that the human race is about to end and they're just like, what's going on? Like,
let's torture children just to spend our last days.
But they had like one line every now and then. They're like, oh, where are all the people? Oh, with no kids, they all went to the cities for jobs. So like, the rural area was just abandoned. Also, is the league bad? Like, when she touches,
we never really,
we'll never know.
When she touches the white dude, he's
but see,
like,
the thing is,
kid,
they're
right?
building the world. Like, in the second one, we're gonna learn what the league is. We're gonna learn like what where if he's gonna regain his memories. There's so much stuff they're setting up for the sequel.
So 2021 no. Darkest Minds 2.
Yes. So because the other thing the other thing that I just have to say this that bothered me was if all the greens are smart and there are so many greens, how come they can't break out of this game?
Yo, no, break, no, break. But
I'm
that,
like, yo,
that could what? Be, if they talked about race, that is something, like, I always, the one thing I hated, like, in history class is, like, people always go, well, if there were more slaves, if they were more powerful, how come they just didn't overthrow? I'm like, and then there's so many psychological things that
people were saying that in history class?
Oh, my God. When I went to history class, people were like, but why didn't you just do this? Why didn't you just do that? And I'm like,
well, they were inferior.
Yes.
Like, what was the answer?
Yes. It's like, there are reasons that they didn't feel like they could. And I'm like, this movie could have touched on that. That movie could have touched on, yes, these people are smart, but we have ways to, like, make them feel docile. Right. Wait.
But also,
But here's what went wrong, guys. This is a movie that's supposedly about personal liberation made by people that were not free. Okay, this director was not free. Yeah. I don't know this writer, but I feel like this was not
whoa,
his vision.
That's deep.
You know what I'm saying? These are a bunch of people who are working in a system, okay? An authoritarian. It's early for me. Authoritarian system to make this movie as a product. You know, nobody is close to the heart of this movie at all, and you can just feel it in the product. And it's like, why give people of color the platform if you don't let them be free while they're doing it? Because that's where you get the auteur, amazing directors out of the 70s. Is you give Francis Ford Coppola a bunch of money and you send him into a jungle and you just let him fuck around, and then sometimes you get Apocalypse Now. Like that's how it works.
but that requires so much trust, and I don't think. It is hard because I don't think people of color get that trust, man. Like,
when they prove themselves.
Yes. Yes. Like, we had our friend on, oh my God, Aaron Covington, who helped co-write Black Panther.
Oh, I love Aaron.
He was talking about even after Black Panther, the jobs he gets to write, they don't want to hear an original story. They just want him to adapt a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, my man has co-written one of the biggest movies to ever exist, and yet he still isn't given the chance to come up with his own content. Like, I just saw the other day, they're making the black version of Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Wonder Years. You telling me?
I love that it's exactly the premise of the sketch that we did for the last episode of just a show but black, and they really are straight doing that.
Yeah.
They're doing the Wonder Years but black. They're literally doing it.
The thing is, like, there are so many creative people who have us on this call right now could come up, and this is not to diss the people who are doing that story, but it's just showing, like, the four of us can sit here and be like, yo, we got an idea for something in 5 minutes. But yet, for some reason, black people in particular, I really think it is, that aren't given the leeway to be trusted enough in Hollywood. Like, whether it comes with directing, whether it comes with writing, whether it comes with acting, because for the most part, again, man, how many dark-skinned black actresses we know leading movies? Viola Davis out here, her clip going around talking about something. Y'all call me Meryl Streep, pay me. And she still ain't getting paid. She came out 3 years ago and said the craziest shit it hurts that it's real. She's like, yo, if you take her, if you take three other of the highest paid black actresses, they still do not make what one Jennifer Lawrence will make.
Right.
Won't come close. And I'm like, what do we, like?
Right. Exactly.
If y'all know me, you know that I'm a secret college professor pretending to be a filmmaker, right? And I would like to say something that I don't think a lot of people realize. This is so baked into the system of Hollywood. Birth of a Nation is not just notable for being very fucking racist, and also the movie where editing is invented and all the shit that D.W. Griffith did, but it also begins the independent film movement in America. Because black people at the time knew this was some bullshit. They protested that movie. The NAACP was very much against it. And in response to that movie, people like Oscar Michaud began a completely black independent version of Hollywood with its own star systems, with its own movie theater chains, with its own writers, with its own directors. And when Hollywood realized that that was making money, they started to make their versions of the black film. And that's when you start to get all these problematic black heroes that are in service of the white man and, you know, the white gaze version of the black experience. And because those movies are made by big Hollywood, the entire black independent film market is destroyed. None of us are brought up hearing about it or learning about who these stars were, what kind of stories they were telling, what kind of innovations they were making, because it's been covered up by this, like, well, we made Gone with the Wind and we gave Hattie McDaniels an Oscar. So we're the good guys here. And it's baked into the system to erase black voices and then to pretend like you did something, like to do the bare minimum and to act like that was like it. We've been doing it since the beginning of this industry. What? We being white people.
What was that name you said? Oscar?
Oscar Michaud. He's the first. He really is like he is. Tyler Perry is the version of him today in the sense that like he translated like, you know, the black theatrical vaudeville circuit into movies and, you know, literally like built this homegrown, homespun movie industries just for black audiences. Really all by himself. And then Hollywood caught wind of that and they started doing it, but with white directors and with like, you know, Sidney Poitier or whoever. Like,
I can't get a movie about him, but I'm about to get another movie about a runaway slave.
Another one about a runaway slave and Black Wonder Years. So you're welcome.
No, but what use his story to inspire you to, you can make a movie about him. Like you can just go off like his legacy.
I think Tyler Perry is playing him in a movie if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
Okay.
So you guys can comment on that. I won't.
Oh my god!
Everyone just laughs. That's the thing about being black. Is you can't like.
We can't critique.
You can't speak freely because you know.
I mean, the thing that's very cool about Lena Waithe is that when Queen and Slim came out and people started critiquing it, she was like, "It's cool to critique my movie." You know what I mean? Because I will say this podcast gives me anxiety because we do end up meeting, people that I will see something and I'm like, oh shit, do they know about like this movie? Like, you know, so it's like, it's hard to critique like art because you don't want to not support it.
Right.
But you also want to be able to critique it like people critique all this other art. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the fact that our shit is not invulnerable to critique is another example of racism.
Yeah.
Like the fact that like a black person can make a movie with black people and it's not that good or it's fine or whatever, and they can't ever make a movie ever again is fucked up. Like, yeah,
exactly.
Have you seen Stanley Kubrick's first movies?
Oh, I had to watch some shit in film. The fact that you're talking about like film school and like in film class, I've seen four Stanley Kubrick movies and I've never heard of Oscar in my life.
Yeah.
It makes me so frustrated. I've had to watch Darren Aronofsky films. I had to watch all these the book Rebels of the Backlot. We had to watch, which is like the film about like Tarantino and Soderbergh and all these rebel white dudes who like did it on their own. And I'm like, I ain't even the only black person I ever heard about like in film school was Spike Lee, but it was only when he did She's Gotta Have It, because he's the guy who got a bunch of credit cards, made this movie, and he became Spike Lee. I'm like...
But so did Robert Townsend, and they never talk about Robert Townsend.
Never heard.
And by the way, so did a man named Charles Lane, and literally I discovered who this was last night, okay? Mm-hmm. He put out a movie in 1989 called Sidewalk Stories. It is The Artist, but way fucking better. And it came out 20 years before The Artist, and this guy worked one more time, like is completely erased from history. And not only is the movie black, independent, came out in 1989 by the same distributor that did She's Gotta Have It, and we're not talking about it for those reasons, beyond the fact that it's black, it's also fucking brilliant. Like, he's a for real genius, like a whole black genius that is just excluded from any conversation about black cinema or independent cinema.
But after listening to you talk, Justin, like, I'm feeling like I'm looking back on, like, what we've been doing over the last 5 years, which is watching major motion pictures that have to have a leading black actor, right? And so most of the times there isn't a black director there, right? Or there isn't a black writer, or like only every once in a while we get the Holy Trinity of black director, writer, and star, right? And like, and so that's 5 years of conversations about these major motion pictures when Like, it feels like we need a spinoff of this podcast that focuses on the story. You know, like, it's like, because if we're going to keep having these conversations about these movies that, like, you know, that suffer from the systemic racism of Hollywood, but then also the systemic issues of Hollywood, period, you know, then these are going to be the only things that are ever talked. If we continue to talk about them, they're the only things that are ever talked about.
Damn.
But it's set up that way because, like, I didn't know Charles Lang existed. I didn't know there were other black directors besides Spike Lee and Robert Townsend, because Spike Lee doesn't talk about that in his autobiographies, and white film professors sure as hell don't.
Yeah.
But there was like a whole bunch of them at that time who made feature films that we've just never heard of, and that just never make our it's systemic. I mean, yeah, it's all the things we say it is.
Yeah.
I normally like do a little letter to Hollywood, but I feel like I need to stop. I feel like, in all honesty, I mean this in serious, it is one thing that I battle with, like, you know, a lot of the elders of my family who, when they were alive, who lived in the South, always talked about like the beauty. It's going to sound crazy, but they talked about the beauty of what segregation did for the black community. They were like, you know, people supported black, like we had a lot of like black colleges, schools, like banks, and we all knew about it. Like right now, I think because of the Black Lives Matter movement, and like there's all these chains of, hey, this is a black restaurant, these are black stores, and like now we're learning about it. But there's something to me about having a legitimate black Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like one where we are our own gatekeepers. Like I think the beauty of a Tyler Perry is Tyler Perry has his own green lighting power, where he has his studio. You know what I mean? Like he has his crew. You can technically go live on his campus. And I'm like, man, what does it look like if the black film leaders, if you will, like got together and just made sure we will look after each other, but also the ones under it? Like you, like I watch all these like docs and you hear Steven Spielberg talk about how he is very adamant about finding other Jewish directors and things of that nature. Like then we see someone who he meets now has introduced him to, like, you know, a Guillermo del Toro. And now we like have Guillermo del Toro looking out for a lot of like Latino directors. And like now everyone's like pulling everybody up. And now people are nominated for Oscars. like literally, if you look at like the best director nominations of the last couple of years, it has changed. Like the landscape of that thing has changed, especially when it comes to like Spanish directors. But I'm like, man, maybe if we did something like that, we could pull up everybody at the end of the day. Like, you know, if we have a show that, I don't know, has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, then it's like, oh, all the black creators can support this. We can get more things of that nature. Like, if we have a show written by, like, women, we can all, not putting the pressure on us, but I just feel like we will never.
No, you're 100% right. And we are set up to not talk to each other about what our budgets are. We are set up to not show each other our movies and get each other's feedback because we're all pitted against each other, you know? Right. And the truth is that, like, I think if you meet certain people from the 90s who are our heroes and who we grow up looking at, they were in a system where literally there could only be one. And I've been often disappointed by the lack of community building that some of our forebears are up to or not up to. But we really can do it ourselves, you know? Like, when I made my last movie, I had table readings with Barry Jenkins and Misha Green and Lena and like all the black people I knew to come listen and read me the riot act on this script and look at the movie. We should be doing the same thing that Spielberg and Coppola and De Palma were doing, because, like, you know, why is Star Wars so fucking good? Well, because like George Lucas was showing his friends every possible cut of the movie and they were helping him turn this thing that nobody was understanding, that was way too fucking long, that like nobody got, into what became Star Wars, because they were in a community together. If he wasn't in that community, Star Wars would have not been what it was. And so what are the gems that we are missing out on because we aren't in that kind of community?
Right. Because we get sold this idea that a lot of these directors, you know, creators are these geniuses who like did everything on their own. And there's very little talk about the fact that, no, there are always people helping them out, right? There are always a network that they are pulling from to get the things done so that they can create the films that we consider iconic. And I will say, I do think that I see that happening in Hollywood, right? Like, it needs to keep happening. It needs to happen more. I know I myself, like, I know Astronomy Club, we are very, like, we wanted to make sure that, you know, in the different production departments, like, we had a diverse group of people, that we had women in control of, you know, departments where they're not always in control of it, and things like that. But, like, after this year, I mean, like, I was like, I can do more. I can, instead of waiting, you know, for, like, certain things and being like, oh, I need to be here, I need to be there until I can do this. It's like, you know, I can go out to people who I think are good right now and talk to them and be like, hey, what do you need help doing? You know what I mean? Like, there's...
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road, ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartland!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
So, what are you thinking for lunch?
I can't. I'm getting new window treatments.
Why don't you just go to Blinds.com?
Because I need custom products.
Blinds.com products are made to order, and they ship samples to you fast and free.
Wow, how convenient. Tell me more.
They can even verify your measurements and handle the installation. Plus, they're 100% satisfaction guarantee.
Well, you've convinced me. Let's go eat. I've got time now.
Shop Blinds.com and save 40% on selected products. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love driving with Uber because I have access to 24/7 live support, which is really great because I like to drive at night. I like to know I have support in the middle of the night or early in the morning. I can chat with a live agent 24/7. As a female driver, I get it. You need to feel protected. And Uber has our back for sure. Uber, earn like a boss. Sign up to earn today at uber.com/boss.
A lot of talk, at least in the entertainment circles, of mentorship, and people trying to find mentors or wanting to be mentors. But I've seen it online. Like, I've seen people tweet out, like, hey, the industry is not telling, the industry is telling me there aren't enough XYZ type of people, XYZ type of writers or actors or producers. Like, can you guys help me out? And it happens, right? Like, people are like, actually, I'm here, you know? So that kind of community building that we're doing and helping each other out and understanding that we actually don't need to have this fear that somebody else's success is going to bring down our success. That's such a American capitalistic, this like mentality of like this zero sum game where like, well, if you get some, then I won't get some. It's so backwards. It's so ingrained in us that that's what we think. And even as marginalized people, we still have that thing, like, you know, it's why the concepts of intersectionality are great too, of like, you know, we don't want to pit different identities against each other or make people feel like they have to choose one. You know, we can talk about them all at the same time. When we talk about Black Lives Matter, we can talk about Black trans lives mattering. Like, we don't have to it's not like if these people get rights, then our rights are going to be taken away. It's not like if these people get jobs, our jobs are going to be taken away. You know, that's such a white mentality. That's exactly the mentality that people are like, yeah, the freaking Black people are taking our jobs, or immigrants are taking our jobs, and like, which is ridiculous because they weren't even working those jobs to begin with.
You didn't want that job, man.
So that's yeah. Anyway, I see it. I'm encouraged by it, and I agree. Like, we need to do more of that. Anyway.
Yeah, but I also don't, the thing I don't want to come off, I don't want to make it like it is our job, like, oh, woe is us. I'm just saying it is something very nice to support, because again, when I watch, man, I'm telling you, man, when you watch these documentaries about like some of these, maybe not the best directors, right? But they get to do these big budget movies. You're like, how did this average ass director get this part? And then you realize, oh, this person met someone along the way who was like, I got you, you know? And I'm like, I just think it'd be cool because, again, like, you know, if I don't know, if John is making a movie and like I produce it and John gets nominated, that's going to help me
at the end of the day is just as much as it's going to help him. It's like, you get nominated for that Oscar, I produced it, cool. I have now produced an Oscar-nominated movie. Like, I'm looking right now, and Forrest Whitaker has been out here producing everything from Fruitvale Station to Dope to Roxanne to Sorry to Bother You, all this stuff. And I'm like, that's the kind of thing that I love, is like, you go back and look at someone's lineage, like, you are doing the work. You may not be taking all the credit for it, but you are doing something to help get this stuff made. Like, I know him and Octavia Spencer have been out here, like, really helping people a lot. But
you know, all I'm going to say is, like, you know, because the whole time I was watching this, I was thinking, like, and I'm not going to talk, I always talk about Hancock at the end of the podcast. I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to say, you know, like, support Jennifer Yu Nelson. Like, she is a, you know, she's a great artist. She did Kung Fu Panda 2 and 3. My favorite show growing up, The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest. She was a storyboard artist and character designer on that. I, like, support her work, continue to support Amandala and Golden Skylin. Brooks and Skylin.
Skylin is so good.
We were talking before the podcast started about the movie The Old Guard that stars Kiki Layne is in that. You know, support these voices, you know, talk about them. Oh, snap. Somebody, The Old Guard on Wiki used to be marketed as a sequel to Hancock, actually, like a direct
stop.
Why are you
sequel.
Doing this?
Really?
Yeah, it was this? On Wiki. It said it was. I forgot about it. It doesn't say it now. It doesn't say it anymore. But someone sent me a screenshot.
You just said it wasn't. You just said you weren't doing Hancock.
I'm not doing the Hancock bit. Just The Old Guard happens to have
and
been.
Here we are.
People are calling it a direct sequel to Hancock. Which I just think is interesting. That
you suckered me into this. Yo, I'm so mad at you.
He did it. He laid it out.
Yo,
it was methodical.
I'm so mad at you.
No, I just... Well,
okay.
Gina Prince-Bythewood directed this movie, we should also
She
say.
Did, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, mm-hmm. The director of Love and Basketball and many other great films.
Yo.
Old Guard? She directed Old Guard?
Apparently people said it's a really... Like, I've read reviews and it's like a really good action movie.
Wow.
Dope.
Okay, it is... It is time for the cause. We rate and review films not based on how much we like them, but whether or not they help the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood. So if we feel like the film fully helped the cause, we give it a black fist. We feel like it somewhat helped the cause, we give it a white palm. If we feel like didn't really help the cause at all, we don't give it anything. Okay? On the count of three, we're going to raise
up our ratings. Hold on, wait. I don't know. Hold on. Okay.
So black help the cause, white palm help the cause?
Kind of.
Okay.
And nothing. Or no, it didn't help it. All right, guys, ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. 5 white palms. I'm sorry. 4 white palms.
What? 4 white palms. That's the full quote.
Oh my goodness.
4 white palms. Yeah, I mean, look, it gave Amandala a credit. You know, it gave Skylin a credit. They were both great in it. It's good. You know, their performances were good, but the movie didn't do squat. I mean, it didn't.
Yeah.
It could be used against them, you know, in terms of their quote unquote box office appeal, which is a thing the movie industry loves to talk about when it comes to stars. It also missed a huge opportunity to further a race narrative, like or the racism, systemic racism narrative, because it didn't want to touch that at all. It just wanted to kind of use the trappings of it and not really get into it. So yeah, that's why I get a white palm.
I mean, same.
Yeah,
I'm a fan. I also will just say, give a shout out to, because we didn't talk much about her because she doesn't do much in this movie, but I'm a fan of my, I don't know how to say her last name, Catch Check? I'm not sure how to say her last name, but I'm a big fan of hers. I've been watching a lot of like kids stuff.
Who is she?
She played Zoo. I'm a big fan of her. She's in like Are You Afraid of the Dark? She was in that Rim of the World, that Netflix movie.
She was in Maybe as well. She's great in that.
She's a really good actor. You know, Amandala was a lead, but instead of it being actually about, instead of it going deeper than just showing a black face, you know, like that was problematic. You know, and so the director, like I see she has one film in development in terms of directing. Like, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Like more stuff from these people.
Agreed. I blame all the white people involved for this movie's failure.
I think I second that. It's like, I don't blame these people of color. I think they did what they had to do. And I think now being in a system where I can see network and studio involvement in ways that I don't like, I'm like, I don't believe this was their fault in any way.
I don't believe this was their fault in any way.
The only other thing I wanted to say, or we didn't talk about, was the Reds. Because there was like,
they had
them as like one of the most dangerous things, and they were just like, they just breathe fire, and they look like demons, and it seemed like they were like kind of completely unthinking or unfeeling, just like, and I was like, what does this mean exactly? I couldn't quite track. I mean, it was hard to track the metaphor for any of this, but I was just like, what? Who are these kids? Like, do they really not think? Yeah. Why are they so easily? Are they only controlled with the mind control? Like, how can he control all their minds at the same time? I don't know. It was strange. I didn't even understand why you would need them. If what's his name? Slipknot or whatever.
Slipkid.
Sounds like a Hey Arnold character.
President's son.
Yeah.
The president's son. Like, if he can control that many people at the same time, why do you need the fire people? They destroyed the camp. Like, you could just use the blue kids to hold everybody down. Like, well, anyway.
I mean, also, that the president, I can never trust that actor because I know he does a bunch of comedy. But now I'm seeing him in this and also realizing he's the dad from Get Out. I can't trust you, bruh.
He's the evilest white guy ever.
Like, you seem too chill. And next thing I know, you out here trying to plot against me. I can't trust you, bruh.
That movie leaves
me with so many questions.
Justin, thank you, man.
Thanks for coming on. For picking this film. I think we had a really robust...
We actually did, though.
Listen.
Not about cinema.
We talked about, like, you know, X-Men. It's like, Halle Berry didn't even have an African accent.
Well, she did. It went in and out in the first one. Yeah, and it was the just first gone one. In the second one.
Yeah. Yo, Storm sounded like she was from, like, the Bay.
It's rough boots.
But you know
her
what?
Her scenes got cut. Apparently, the reason that toad line makes no sense is because there were other scenes that would make it make sense. But
about toads?
I bet if Famke Janssen said the line, they would have had the scenes in there.
I mean, it's funny because I wonder, is that why she's such a big part in X2? Because she had won the Oscar by the time they started filming that and writing it. So it was like, we got to put her in it.
Also, but they still couldn't do anything about it. As much as love X-Men 2.
It's still bullshit. Like,
yeah.
They give her a speech to Nightcrawler in the plane.
Yeah.
And but no character development, no like sexual interests, no like complicated life, no reason why she had an accent in the last movie and it's gone now. Like, none of it.
If they're smart, they're going to give that woman a spinoff. Give Storm a spinoff. Because if you give her a spinoff...
They had several chances to do this, and they didn't do it.
In first class...
They made three Wolverine movies.
Right.
Wolverine was the lead of all of the X-Men movies, and then they made three spinoff movies where he was, the lead.
Storm and Black Panther in a relationship in the comics?
So my theory is, if they do it properly, they can give Storm her own movie, right? And then eventually, because depending on which comic you read, she saved T'Challa when he was young. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you can, like, the fourth movie, bring her into the Black Panther world, have that big crossover. You know, I don't know what Lupita's character going to do because technically he married Storm, so I don't know what's going to happen there. But it makes sense. Like, they become rulers of what, like, they can do it.
It would also be cool if she was African. Like, that'd be really cool.
Because
she
is.
If they just, like, cast an African person to play this African character. And no shade to Holly or Alexandra Shipp, but that's not...
No shade.
That's not the Storm I remember.
No, man. Like, yeah. Storm in that joint with the crazy faux hawk. That, yo.
The faux hawk.
Yo, just, woo! They can do it, man. I'm telling you.
Faux hawk Storm.
They have, Marvel has the rights. They don't have a lead black woman superhero, right? No. No, there's no lead.
They got Tessa and Thor, but that's it.
Yeah, yeah. But like, and I guess she, yeah.
Yeah, I guess Tessa.
Yeah, I guess. But also, how cool would it be to see, like, I don't know, a dark-skinned Storm with an African accent just out here, just, come on, man. She controls the goddamn weather.
By the way, was a leader. She was a more powerful leader than Cyclops of the X-Men.
And then she became the leader at one point. In multiple versions of the X-Men, she was the leader. The fact that they made Mystique the big draw for, like, the new class, and she became a superhero when she was never a hero in the comics, I was like,
oh, my God.
All right, guys.
And then Days of Future Past happened, and then they were like,
we "No, guys, we
make
can't talk
Wolverine.
About this because I tried to talk about X-Men. Y'all want to talk about Dark Minds, so it's over. The podcast is done.
Thank you. Right. Speak your mind, Justin.
Can people
speak
follow you anywhere? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm at Justin_Simeon S-I-M as in Moon, I-E-N as in Net on Instagram. I'm also jsim07 on Twitter, but I literally don't have Twitter on my phone because of mental health reasons. So facts. You can follow me there. I may see what you have to say at some point. I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet.
Yo, watch, dear white people, get that 600 increase in
100%.
God damn. Wow.
I get no extra money, but you should still watch it. And my next movie, Bad Hair, comes out on Hulu. If that's okay with you, Jared.
I mean, listen, it's okay. Yo, when does it come out? Like, for real, I want to watch it. New Jack Swing era.
It's coming out this fall, October-ish.
Yo, man, get it.
All right.
All and I then, care about is people getting that work.
Your podcast, right? Don't At Me.
Podcast Don't At Me. You guys have to come on it. We just started it back up. It's going to probably be airing like in the next couple weeks. I don't know when this will air, so it might be already out. But you can jump in on the first season, you know, because there's plenty of people who haven't heard of it. So Don't At Me. It's my podcast.
There you go.
Season 2 coming soon.
Thanks again. Thanks again for coming on. Talking about the darkest minds. All right, guys. You can follow us at Black Men Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. BlackMenPodcast.com is our website. We got merch there. We got some fun Hancock shirts there.
Yes.
Is Hancock a good movie? We don't know.
James loves it.
He's my favorite.
If you rate and review us on iTunes, give us 5 stars, we'll read your review on the air. So I'm just going to read one of these reviews. This one, I don't think I read this one before. McCartney, loving this. After listening to white guys talk about movies for years, I am glad I found this podcast. Silly guys, funny guys.
Silly guys.
A weird end to it.
Silly guys.
Silly guys.
It said silly guys, funny guys.
Silly guys.
We are silly guys. That was great. Thank you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. Peace.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.
What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!